Matthew chapter 1, let's read verses 18 through 25. Matthew chapter 1, verses 18 through 25. Now the birth of Jesus Christ was on this wise. When his mother Mary was espoused to Joseph before they came together, she was found with child of the Holy Ghost. Then Joseph, her husband, being a just man, and not willing to make her a public example, was minded to put her away privily or privately. But while he thought on these things, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a dream, saying, Joseph, thou son of David, fear not to take unto thee Mary, thy wife, for that which is conceived in her is of the Holy Ghost. And she shall bring forth a son, and thou shalt call his name Jesus, and he shall save his people from their sins. Now, all this was done that it might be fulfilled which was spoken of by the Lord, by the prophet, saying, behold, a virgin shall be with child, and shall bring forth a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which being interpreted is God with us. Then Joseph, being raised from the sleep, did as the angel of the Lord had bidden him, and took unto him his wife, and knew her not till she brought forth her firstborn son, and called his name Jesus. Mary and Joseph were engaged to be married. And in Israel, engagements were very, very binding. And they should be still today. But unfortunately, in our culture, they're not nearly as binding as they were in Bible days. When they got engaged, everybody considered them husband and wife, but not to the point that they were living together yet. They were not living together, but this is my wife, even though we're not married yet. Our wedding days, you know, December or whatever, but this is my wife. And it was very, very binding. And Joseph and Mary were engaged, and during that engagement time, Mary was visited by the angel and told that she was going to give birth to Jesus Christ, and that the Holy Spirit of God placed baby Jesus inside of her. That was a miracle from God. And she then had to tell Joseph the news. And Joseph, being a normal human, said, yeah, right. You're expecting me to believe that you're expecting a baby and it was put there by God and you haven't been unfaithful? And she said, that's true. And Joseph was saying, wait a minute, I don't get this. This doesn't make any sense at all. And so he was planning to break their engagement. That was the only time that it was allowed to have divorce among the Jews, was during their engagement time. They could divorce during their engagement time because they had not yet come together physically. And so he was going to break that off, and it says he was going to do it privately, because he could have done it publicly, and it would have, you know, when you go back to the Old Testament law, if you look at what the Old Testament law said, if she was unfaithful to him during this time, he could have had her stoned to death for what she did. And he said, no, I don't want to do that. I love her. I'm going to put her away privately, and we'll just break it off and let her worry about her problems, and because she's been unfaithful to me. And then the angel comes to Joseph and said, no, Joseph, she was telling you the truth. She has not been unfaithful. She is expecting a baby that God placed inside of her. And it's the Son of God, Jesus Christ, Emmanuel, who will be born the Messiah. And so Joseph and Mary, as they went through this time, it was a time, just kind of picture in your mind, especially those of you who are married, you can picture it more than the young people can. But picture the disgrace, picture the fear, picture the frustrations that they were facing, and how Mary must have felt when she had to go talk to Joseph and to tell him what was taking place. And Joseph's thinking, I don't believe this. And the communication they had between the two of them, it could have erupted into a war. You can just imagine in our day today, if something like that happened, there would be an explosion among many people. They would just be angry at each other because you've been unfaithful to me and you've cheated on me and you've done wrong. And there would be fighting and arguing between them. But the two of them worked it through. They had communication that was marvelous communication, able to communicate about some of the hardest subjects you could communicate about, and were able to work through it in a peaceful way. And they supported each other through this whole trial and through this whole drama, and even through her whole pregnancy and the delivery, and even on through life. Even in later in life, what was Jesus accused of? He was accused of being born of fornication. He was accused of being not legitimate. All through his life, Jesus had to deal with that. But Joseph and Mary, all through their life, people were accusing them of being unfaithful. Something wasn't right, and they were accusing unfaithfulness there. But Joseph and Mary stuck together. And they stayed together because they had the ability to communicate and work through their problems. Severe problems, deep problems, emotional problems. And yet they worked through those problems together in harmony. Now, as we look at this subject of communication, as I mentioned this morning, marriage counselors tell us that poor communication is one of the major problems in marriages today. Poor communication. You know, even if you have a good marriage, and my marriage is a good marriage, and we've got real good communication, but many marriages don't have good communication. Even if you've got a fairly good marriage, you may struggle with communication. Communication is something that is difficult because of our fleshly characteristics about us. And so tonight, as we think about being home builders, we're going to learn to communicate so that we can have a happy, harmonious home. Now, the things we're going to be talking about here tonight are not just for husbands and wives, although it can be a great help to you husbands and wives. It's for you kids as well. Getting along with mom and dad, getting along with each other, getting along someday with your spouse when you get married someday. And you need to be learning from these things and remembering these things so that they can be a great help to you. So I've divided it up into four actions that we should take to be able to communicate better with others, especially with our spouse. Four actions. The first action is this. You need to prepare your heart. You need to prepare your heart. Prepare your heart. Communication originates in the heart. I taught the young people about this a couple of youth activities ago. But I used an illustration. I had a garden watering bucket or a pitcher. And our heart is like that pitcher. All the contents of our heart are in that pitcher. And as we pour it out, it comes out of our lips and it comes out of our mouth, and the only thing that comes out of our mouth is what is in our heart. And so our heart is the pitcher from which words flow. Jesus said in Matthew 15:19, he says, out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemy. He said all the things that come out of our heart or out of our mouth originate in our heart. And that's a very important thing for us to understand. The content of your heart will decide the content of your words. The content of your heart will decide the content of your words. If there's bitterness in your heart, bitterness will produce words that are cruel, harsh, hurtful, unkind, mean, and so on. If there is godliness in your heart, your heart will produce words that are kind, tender, empathetic, loving, and caring. See, it all depends on what's inside. And I start with the heart and the importance of preparing our heart, because if we don't prepare our hearts, we can try really, really hard to say, I'm going to be kind, I'm going to be nice, I'm not going to say bad things. But if we don't deal with the heart, no matter how hard we try, it's still going to come out. Because there's problems inside. And you cannot talk sweetly with a sour heart. You know, keeping your heart clean will help you control your untamable tongue. You know, it's important for us to understand at the onset that God says our tongue is untamable. Untamable. You know, we have animals in our world that are tame. You know, my dog is tame, except when he sees another cat or another dog, and then he becomes untamed. But he's tame most of the time. She's been tamed. And we can tame, cats are generally fairly tame unless they're feral. You can tame rabbits. You can tame other things. You can tame even some wild animals. And God says there that in James, he tells us that all kinds of beasts have been tamed, but he says the tongue can no man tame. The tongue can no man tame. Now, what's the difference between being tame and being controlled? Well, there's a big difference. You can control an untamed animal, but you cannot tame. For example, a lion. Now, I'm not saying lions can't be tamed. They probably could be tamed to a degree, but I don't think I would ever get to the point where I trust a lion. But they can be tamed to a degree. But they can certainly be controlled. You know, they got the trainer that's in there with them with his whip and whatever. He can control the lions, but I would be a little bit leery about saying they're tame. There's a big difference. And God says you can control your tongue, but you'll never tame your tongue. In other words, you can never trust your tongue. Never trust your tongue. Because it's the spout from your heart. And our heart often has things in it they shouldn't have. And if there is something in our heart that shouldn't be there, it can and often will come out the tongue. And we need to be careful with that. And so, it's important for us to see that. And as I mentioned a moment ago, I said you cannot talk sweetly with a sour heart. You cannot talk sweetly with a sour heart. Now, the last 3 weeks, we've talked about 3 different messages on marriage. And I did that purposely to help us prepare our hearts. The first week, we talked about the importance of cherishing marriage. We talked about faith, being faithful in leaving, cleaving, and weaving in our family, in our home. We talked about being thoughtful in our love and respect for our spouse. Very, very important if we're going to have the communication that God wants us to have. Second week, we talked about quashing selfishness. If we don't get our foot on selfishness and squash it and quash it and stop it in our life, selfishness will stop you from communicating. Because you will say, I'm not going to talk to them. They're hurting my feelings. And there's going to be all kinds of protect me. I'm better than them. And I'm going to do what I want. And we refuse to communicate. And so selfishness will stop our communication. So it's very important that we are convinced that selfishness is harmful, admit the selfishness that is there, and then seek God's help to get rid of it. To get rid of it. Then the last week we talked about forgiving completely and bitterness or unresolved anger or an unwillingness to confess or forgive sin will sour our hearts. And if we have sourness in our heart, if you have a sour heart, you cannot speak sweet words. It won't happen. Because out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. And so we cannot go against what God has said is true. Out of our heart proceeds all these things. And out of the heart, the mouth speaks. So we've got to control what's in the heart in order for us to be able to control what comes out of our mouth. Now, if you still struggle with these 3 things, the cherishing your marriage, quashing your selfishness, and forgiving as you should, go back and listen to the sermons again. You know, I have a number of sermons that I listen to by various preachers, and many times I'll listen to the same one again and again and again and again because I need it over and over. And so go back and listen to it again if you're still struggling with some of those things, because until you get the victory over the sourness in your heart, you will not be able to speak sweetly. And that's what we're seeking to do. Now, contents of our heart come out in 3 ways. There's 3 ways that the contents of your heart will come out. First of all, it comes out in words. Now, that's the most common thing we think of. It's going to come out in our words. And we need to be very careful of our choice of words, because they are unloading what's in our heart. It's fine when all is well, but when there's pressure, somebody stepped on you and you're irritated and our blood pressure is boiling and we're about to explode, it's not easy to control our words. But we need to control our words. So our words are one way. Another way that we communicate is with tones, with our tone. You know, sometimes we don't think about that, but the tone of our voice makes a whole lot of difference. You know, if I said to my wife, I love you, do you think she'd believe me? She might. But if I said, honey, I love you, there's a total difference. I said the same thing, but in a different tone. And the tone makes a huge difference. And the tones of our voice can change the whole meaning. And so we need to guard our tones very carefully. There's a 3rd way that we speak and communicate our heart, and that is with nonverbal actions. Facial expressions, our eye contact, gestures, our posture, and even our touch. You know, if you look at somebody with a blazing eyes like this and said, I forgive you, they're going to say, I don't think so. Why? Because your eyes speak something different. Or our actions. Or, I mean, the way that we, even our posture. You know, if you're just saying, I love you. You know, it doesn't work, does it? See? And so our nonverbal actions speak very loudly. And, you know, we laugh, but a lot of times if we could have a video of us when we are responding in the wrong way, we'd see that there's an awful lot of nonverbal actions that are taking place. And we need to be careful of our nonverbal actions, whether it be our eyes, or our facial expression, or our bodily functions, or our features, or the way that we're responding, or all of these things. They all have to do with our speaking, our communication. So those three ways, our words, our tones, and our nonverbal actions. Now, we've looked so far at preparing our heart. Second thing we need to do is we need to open our ears. We need to open our ears. Prepare your heart, but then you need to open your ears. Communication, according to Les Parrott, who is an author and a marriage counselor, he said 98% of good communication is listening. Hearing is passive, listening is actively interacting with the message. All right, now let me say that again. He said hearing is passive. All right, let's just talk again about passive and active. All right, if I said the ball, I hit the ball, that's active. The ball hit me, that's passive. It happened to me. Active is I did it. All right, so he says here, hearing is passive, listening is active. You know, you may be hearing me tonight, but not listening. You know, sometimes we just kind of put it in neutral. You ever do that? I do it too often when my wife talks. You know, she's talking to me, and I got it in neutral, and she says, "What do you think?" I said, "What about what?" "About what I just said." "What'd you say?" "I'm sorry, I didn't hear you." "Yeah, I had it in neutral. You know, I heard, but I didn't listen." All right? So listening is active, hearing is passive, and we need to make sure we're listening. And in order to do that, we need to open our ears and listen attentively. One of the basic things to help us listen, there's three words that'll help you listen better. Stop, look, and listen. Stop, look, and listen. You know, if someone speaks to you, and this is what I need to do, and I'm preaching to myself, this is the one I'm really hitting myself with tonight, is stop, look, and listen. When my wife says something to me, I need to stop what I'm doing, look at her, and listen. All right? And then I'll hear what she says, and then I'll listen to what she says. But if I keep on reading my book or thinking about what I was thinking on or whatever I was doing, and she's chattering away to me, I'm not listening very good. And then she says, "Did you catch that?" I said, "Catch what?" You know, so I didn't stop, I didn't look, and I didn't really listen. Those three things, you kids can learn a great deal from that. When mom and dad speak to you, if you stop, look, and listen. Stop, look, and listen. That'll help you to learn and to hear what they're saying. James chapter 1 verse 19 says, "Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath." So God says we're to be swift to hear, quick hears, listen quickly. Now, another thing we should do is not interrupt someone when they're talking. Don't interrupt when they're talking. And you know, when we're upset and we're having a bit of a squabble, it's very easy to say, right in the middle, they're explaining their side of it, "Yeah, but I think..." No, just stop and listen. Let them finish their talk instead of interrupting. And then, if someone speaks crossly to you, look for the cause behind the words and ask yourself some questions. Questions like this. Did I hurt them? Did I say something unkind? Did I forget something? Was I selfish? Why are they cross at me? You know, people usually don't get mad at you for no reason. If your wife is upset with you, there's probably a reason. If your husband's cross with you, there's probably a reason. You've probably done something, or he thinks you've done something, to upset him. And we need to start asking ourselves these questions, because it'll help us then to stay calm instead of just retaliating. We stop and think about what was taking place. So we need to open our ears, stop, look, and listen. Then here's a really important thing that I need to work on as well. That is, we need to clarify what you heard. Clarify what you heard. In other words, repeat what you heard and ask if that was correct. So if your wife says something to you, you say, all right, let me just make sure I caught that. This is what you said, right? No, that's not what I said. I said this. Because sometimes, you know, with our tone of voice or our expressions or the way that we said it, we imply something that wasn't what we really meant. And so we need to make sure we've really understood what was being said. And once we truly understand, then, you know, we're not jumping to conclusions and making a decision or deciding how to answer without knowing really what was really said. So we need to ask that question or repeat what we heard and make sure it was right. Proverbs 18:13 says, he that answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly and shame to him. He that answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly and shame to him. So we shouldn't answer until we know what has been said. And we can't know what's been said unless we clarify it and make sure that we've got it right, so that we're not just guessing. Now, seek to understand your spouse, what they're trying to say. You know, try to see the situation from their perspective. Maybe you're having a spiritual discussion, you know, just a bit of a verbal battle, all right? And you're trying to work through it. Well, the right thing to do is try to see it from their perspective. You know, we see it from our side. And you know, we've talked about this in the past, but guys and girls are different in a lot of ways, not just in the way they look and the way they sing. We're different inside. And us guys see things from a totally different perspective than the ladies do a lot of times. And we may not see it from their perspective. And we need to stop and think, how is she thinking right now? What is she saying? Why has this upset her? What have I done? What has caused this problem? Why does this thing make such a big deal to her and it doesn't seem to matter to me? Or whatever the issue. But try to see it from the other person's perspective and be empathetic. That big word, empathetic, is a word that I use quite often, and it's important you understand what it means. It's not sympathetic, it's empathetic. Empathetic means to try to feel what they feel, to put yourself in their shoes. If I was sitting over there and she's sitting over here and flip it around, what would she be thinking? What's going on in her mind? Put yourself in their shoes. How would I respond if I was attacking me like I'm attacking her? All right? And so put it the other way around. Be empathetic. So the first one, prepare your heart. Second, open your ears. Third, guide your mouth. Guide your mouth. George Sala made this quote. He said, it's difficult not only to say the right thing in the right place, but far more difficult to leave unsaid the wrong thing at a tempting moment. So there's a lot of truth to that. It's far more difficult to keep unsaid what we really are tempted to say in that tempting moment of the wrong thing. So, God tells us to be slow to speak. James chapter 1 verse 19, that verse we read a moment ago, it says, wherefore, be my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak. Slow to speak. Now, what that means is that we need to not respond rashly. You know, if someone is throwing verbal hand grenades at you, you need to be slow to speak. You know, our flesh wants to retaliate by shooting bombs back at them. You know, they're throwing grenades at me. I'm going to get back at them. Forget the grenades. I'll get the bombs. We're going to go after them because they're attacking me. That's our flesh. And Proverbs 12:18 says, there is that speaketh like the piercings of a sword, but the tongue of the wise is health. So he says, there's two kinds that we can speak. We can speak in a healthful way, or we can speak like the piercing of a sword. You know, they come after us with their grenade. We get out our sword and start swinging it. And we attack them. And so God says that's not the right way to do it. Now, the right way to respond is slowly and calmly. Slowly and calmly. Seek to find out what has irritated them. I mentioned that a moment ago, but that's very important. Seek to find out what it is that has caused this blow up, this irritation. Why are they attacking me? Why are they throwing grenades at me? Something's wrong. They're upset. What's happened? Sometimes they're not even really mad at us. Maybe, you know, you come home from work and the kids have been driving her crazy all day long, and she's just ready to take it out on anybody, and you happen to be the one that walks in the door. And so she takes it out on you, and it really wasn't your fault at all, but, you know, that she's just frustrated. So, well, find out. Calm down, honey. What's wrong? What's bothering you? Why are you acting like this? And if you've done something wrong, Well, apologize and seek the forgiveness. Get it straightened out and go back to those things we talked about with forgiveness. If you've been selfish in some way, well, then deal with that the right way and get it taken care of. And so we need to go back and take care of those. Now remember, this is an important thing to remember. Remember, another's sinful talk never gives you a license to respond with sinful talk. No matter who it is, if they come at you with sinful talk of any kind, whether they're yelling or screaming or calling you names or being mean or being just yelling at you, whatever, that doesn't give you the license to retaliate with the same. You know, so they start chucking grenades at you, doesn't give you the permission to chuck grenades back at them. Never does. We don't have a license to do that. God says that we need to be calm at those kind of times. And that's not easy. But Romans 12, verse 21 is a very good verse to memorize. It says, be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. Do not let the enemy overcome you with evil. Now, your spouse is not necessarily your enemy, but in this battle time, it may be. And so don't let them overcome you. In other words, don't let their irritating remarks overcome you to the point where you lose control and explode. Friday night in our youth activity, we talked about building walls. Walls of protection around us to keep us from responding in sinful ways. And God tells us that a city that has no walls is a city that is in danger. And our lives are like that little city that needs walls around it to protect us from the dangers that are out there around us. And one of the dangers is to respond in a wrong way. Now, we need to choose our words very carefully. Another thing that often counselors will emphasize is that we need to make I statements instead of you statements. Now, just think about that. You need to make I statements instead of you statements. Because if you start saying, I feel bad about this, or I feel like you're attacking me, or I feel like, you know, there's a problem here, it's far better than saying, you have done this, and you did that, and you did this, and you did that, because the you words are accusing. The I words are asking for information most of the time. So it's far better to use I instead of you when you're having a debate or a confrontation, because it'll keep things more under control instead of accusing and blaming. Now, do not use unkind forms of communication. You know, there's a lot of unkind ways that we can talk, and here's a few that you can meditate upon. Generalizations. I get it. My wife gets after me about this sometimes, because I do this sometimes, and I'm bad. You know, you always do that. Well, that's not true. She doesn't always. Might sometimes. But to say, you always do that, or the generalizations where we're accusing in a general way. Again, if we were using the I, it wouldn't be the problem either. But when we start using the you, and use you, and then we use generalizations, that's not good. Blaming is not good. Digging up the past, oh, that's a bad one, because if you've dealt with the forgiveness completely, then we don't dig up the past. It's buried. It's gone. We don't dig that up. All right? We got enough problems in the present. We don't dig up the past. All right? But if we start digging up the past, or scolding, or putting them down, or hurt, or being harsh, or calling names, all those kind of things are bad. Those are unkind forms of communication. We need to be tender. You know, that's the right thing to do. Be tender. This is very, very, very difficult when we're being attacked. It is very difficult to be tender when you're being attacked. It doesn't matter who's attacking you. You know, if somebody's grabbing on you, attacking you verbally, or throwing grenades at you, it's very difficult to stay calm and be tender. But that's what God wants. And we need God's help. We can't do it in our own strength. We need God's help. Several verses that speak on that, you might want to note them. Proverbs 15:28, the heart of the righteous studieth to answer, but the mouth of the wicked poureth out evil things. Proverbs 10:19, in the multitude of words there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. Colossians 4:6, let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that ye may know how you ought to answer every man. Now let's just examine that verse a little bit, because that's got some unusual wording in it. He says there, let your words be always with grace. What does he mean by grace? Well, grace is unmerited favor, or something we don't deserve. So when God says our speech should be always with grace, that means if Melody says something unkind to me, I am supposed to respond with grace, not with retaliation. I'm supposed to say something nice even if she doesn't deserve it. I'm supposed to say something nice, not something mean. All right? Always with grace, seasoned with salt. What's the purpose of salt? Well, it's very important in our lives, but in the Bible days, it was very important for preservation. They would preserve things. They would put meat in salt. They would put vegetables in salt because salt preserves things. And salt is a preserving thing. And so he says that our, and it also seasons it and makes it taste better. You know, you eat your food without any salt on it and it's bland. And it doesn't taste very nice. So it not only preserves, but it makes it taste better. So he says your words should be seasoned with salt. Then they should, he says, seasoned with salt that you may know how you ought to answer every man. We need to think before we speak. Know how you ought to answer every man. Think before we speak. Lots of good things in that verse. Now, also, moving right on here, we also need to plan regular times to talk. You know, this is very important. And I have observed, just in my casual observation, among a lot of people, that many, many families do not communicate. Now, so far we've made the communication whole theme sound like it's, you know, just settling battles. Communication is far more than settling battles. That's only kind of the major part of the big problems. But communication is about talking. Communication is about fellowshipping together. It is sharing ideas. It is making plans together. It is talking about the Bible together. It is getting counsel. It is discussing school issues. It's laughing. It's telling stories. It's comforting. It's encouraging. It's sharing burdens. It's sharing blessings. It's just spending time talking. And you know, it is a concern that, you know, our families need to be communicating. You know, there's been times I've talked to some of you and I'll ask one of you, oh, what's your family doing? I don't know. And it's like, don't you guys ever talk? Did you guys ever communicate? How come you guys don't know what's going on in your family? Right? And, you know, that's a problem. We need to be communicating about all kinds of things. Everything in life we should be talking about. We're a unit. We're a family. Mom and Dad and the kids, we should be talking over things, communicating. And especially Mom and Dad, there's things you guys need to be talking about all the time. You need to be in harmony. Like we talked about this morning about how the Holy Spirit and the Father and the Son are synchronized. The husband and wife need to be synchronized as well. So that our thoughts are working together. We're synchronized. We got the same thinking on these things because we talk about it all the time. We're working through these things. Now, sometimes it is good to do that. Mealtimes is an excellent time. Mealtime is a great time to talk. You know, in the olden days, in the Victorian days, sit down and be quiet. You need to sit there and eat with your mouth quiet. No talking. I don't think that's a good idea. Mealtime is a great time to talk. Now, don't talk with your mouth full. Although I did, you know, that you kids are like this. I read something just the other day. I was reading a preaching book, and he said, even though this isn't very good etiquette, he says, one of the ways to help you to learn to pronounce your words more carefully and more specifically is to talk with your mouth full. He said, fill your mouth full and then talk and make it clear. But you got to practice. It isn't just being unethical, but you're supposed to, you know, I mean, you don't have to put food in there. You can put something else in there. But to talk and make it clear, even though you got stuff in your mouth. But anyway, that's a side point. But we need to talk together at mealtimes. And then just before bed is an excellent time. You know, spend some time. Mom and Dad, go and spend some time with the kids and just talk with them. And talk about what the day's been like and have prayer with them and spend some tender times together and discussing things. And it's great to do it one by one because then you can get your heart and you're building a heart with them. So that one by one, if you always do it with all of them together, they're not so apt to open their heart to you. But you want to get so that they can open their heart to you. And you're spending time with them one by one, even from youth all the way up to your young adult age. Spend time with them every day in communicating like that so that it'll help to build those communicating times. And then also during walks and in the car, after church, you know, it's great. Go home and talk about the sermon. You know, I wonder how often would you go home and on your way home from church, or maybe when you get home, talk to the kids and let's all, as a family, let's talk about what we learned tonight. Let's discuss it again. That's great. That's important because it reinforces it. But you're communicating as a family. So, the last point, we've looked at three so far. We've learned that first of all, we need to prepare our heart. Second, we need to open our ears. Third, we need to guide our mouths. Lastly, we need to bend our knees. We need to ask God for help. You know, none of us are perfect communicators. I'm not a perfect communicator. You're not a perfect communicator. And we need to ask God for help. We need to ask God for help. Now, we need to ask Him, first of all, to clean our heart, to adjust our ears, to guide our mouth. We need to ask God for help. We need help with these things. All of us do. And so ask God to help you. But ask Him also to help you to understand your spouse and to understand your children, to understand their needs, their feelings, their emotions, the things that they're going through. But then also ask God to help your spouse and your children. Ask God to help them. And you children, ask God to help you to understand mom and dad, and ask God to help mom and dad understand you. We need to be praying because God is the only one that can help us to do these things that are basically impossible for us. Remember, He said the tongue can no man tame, and we have a problem with our heart. And because we have sin in our heart and our tongue can't be tamed, we all are going to have problems with our communication from time to time. And so we need God's help to do what it seems to be impossible, especially during times of interaction where we're having tension. And you're upset and they're upset, and that's the hardest time in the whole world to do what God said to do and to stay calm and respond in a loving, calm, tender way. We need God's help. So pray, God, please help me. And if you have a serious problem in this, you need to be begging God for help. God, you've got to help me conquer this. And God will help you. But if it isn't an epidemic of a problem in your heart, still pray that God will help you and to be able to understand. But not only do you need to pray for help, but you need to also pray with your spouse and with your children. Absolutely important. Virtually every marriage book I pick up that's written by Christian authors, they emphasize the importance of praying with your spouse. You need to pray with your spouse. Now, if you have not done this and it's tough and you find it awkward and you feel so uncomfortable, here's some suggestions. First of all, husbands, be a leader. It's hard, but be the leader anyway and lead in this. But then just pray, even if it's a 30-second prayer together with your spouse before you go to bed. Kneel down by your bedside, put your arm around your spouse, and just pray a 30-second prayer. Thank God for the good day it's been. Whatever. Just start out basic. But then do it every day, and little by little, you will feel more comfortable, and you'll be able to expand and be able to talk about other things. And the goal is that you can gradually add requests until you're able to share your whole heart openly with God before your spouse. And the two of you pouring your heart out to God over the issues in your home. That is important. And you can do it, but it takes time. I mean, even if it takes you a month or 2 months before you can get to that point where you're pouring out more of your real heart, at least get a start at it. I mean, if you have to work for 2 weeks at the 30-second prayers, then do that. But let's each night before you go to bed, kneel down by your bed, put your arm around your spouse, and just talk to God. And get working on that. But then also, pray with your children. When you go into the rooms at night, and again, it's best if it's one-on-one, because it'll open up their heart to you, and it'll build that bond that you need between them. Now, it's great to have family Bible time and pray with your family, but that one-on-one time is very, very important in building a bond between you and that child. And pray with them, and then teach your children to pray. Teach them to pray. You know, the children need to learn how to pray. They can learn by your example, yes, but teach them actually how to pray. And if you're building that bond with them and you're saying, all right, now let's learn how to pray. I want you to pray today and you pray for this and this and this. And if they said something that they shouldn't have said, if you've built a bond there, you can lovingly afterwards say, all right, now this is probably a better way you could have worded that so that we we don't offend God or whatever. I mean, if there's an issue. Right? Many times there's not an issue and the child can just pray. There's not a specific way the child has to pray, but you know what is right and what is wrong. But help them. Teach them. Guide them. Encourage them and get them praying. Have them, once they get accustomed to it, have them praying for the meal times and things like that. And encourage them not to just pray, a written prayer or something they've memorized. Teach them to pray from their heart. And we need to pray from our hearts when we're with them. So prayer, absolutely important. So the four things again, the four actions that we need to take. First of all, prepare our heart. Secondly, open our eyes. Thirdly, guide our mouths. Fourthly, bend our knees. And we will greatly improve our communication if we'll do that. And you know, Joseph and Mary did something in their relationship to be able to have good communication. And the Bible's not really specific about it, but we know they worked through some of the most difficult problems that you can imagine. And they did it successfully. And they supported each other through it all. And they had a strong bond. That's what we need. Let's work on our communication. And again, you cannot speak sweet words from a sour heart. You've got to deal with the heart. If there's things in your heart that aren't what they ought to be, that's where you got to begin. But let's let God have His way. We can all improve our communication if we'll apply these four principles.